Turn your Bibles to the book of Isaiah. We've been reading Isaiah for several months now. We'll look at the second section, or the next section in our studies of this. We looked at chapters 13 through 23 as we were about midway through that period. I want to remind you of what that section was about. It was basically a roll call. Remember the first day of school when you sit down, the teacher just goes through the roll and all the names are called out. Starting in chapter 13 of Isaiah, there is a roll call. Chapter 13, verse 1, the burden of Babylon. 15, the burden of Moab. Chapter 17, the burden of Damascus. You remember we looked at that? It was just a long section where God is talking of impending destruction on all of these nations that have rebelled. Judah, a part of that. Israel, a part of that. They have burdens because of their sins. And chapters 13 through 23 dealt with that. And we studied that several months ago. We're now beginning in our studies, on our readings on Sundays, chapters 24 through 27. That is a unit. It's a distinct unit. And so as we begin those readings, let's just take the time in this period here, and let's just look through that distinct section. It's closely related to the one we just mentioned, but there is a ray of hope that's given. It's kind of a conclusion and a grand finale to that prior section with this incredible ray of sunshine that comes in at the end. I think Shane was the one that read for us last week in chapter 24. Ryan just finished that reading up today. And we're not looking at an in-depth study of all this. We're doing four chapters. Chapters 24 through 27 is the unit. It's the section. But we're not going to go verse by verse, obviously. But I just want us, as we go into these next couple months of our readings, that we have an idea. Because Isaiah is not an easy book. And for if all we're doing is just reading 10 or 12 verses every 7 days, it's not going to make a lot of sense to us. It's just going to, we can do it, but we're not going to get much out of that. It's a lot of it is poetic. A lot of it, we're going to, even as it's being read, you may be thinking, what is that talking about? Well, that's what we want to do. Try to give some insight into these readings so that they'll mean more to us as we take the time to do that each week. Chapters 24 is just the conclusion of everything we studied in our last section. Chapters 13 through 23, the burdens of the nations. The burdens of those who are not walking according to God's will. And chapter 24 is the finale of that. What we just read these last couple weeks is this terrible scene of God's judgment. It's this divine punishment that is coming on the nations. And I just want to pull out a couple of the verses. Look in verse 2 and 3. It'll be as with the people, so it is with the priest. As with the servant, it'll be with the master. With the maid, as the mistress. The buyer and the seller. The lender, the borrower. The taker, the giver. The land will be utterly emptied and utterly spoiled. The Lord has spoken. What verse 2 is saying is, it doesn't matter who you are. Did you catch all the contrast? The lender, the user. The buyer, the seller, the maid, and the mistress. It doesn't matter who you are. You can live in a hut. You can live in a palace. You can have all the money in Israel. You can have all the money in Babylon. Or you can be a pauper. God has spoken, and judgment is coming. And to paraphrase it with a phrase that we'll be familiar with, it's God telling the nations, I'm cleaning house. And none of you are going to escape that. None of you are going to miss out on that. Just by picking out some of the verses, let the doom kind of pile up and let the chaos be described. Look in verse 6. Therefore has the curse devoured the earth, and they that dwell therein are found guilty. Therefore the inhabitants of the earth are burned, and few men will be left. Verse 8, the joy, the mirth, the happiness of the tambourines will cease. The noise that rejoices will end. The joy of the harp ends. Verse 10. The city of confusion is broken down. Every house is shut up. Nobody is coming in. Verse 12. The city is left desolate. The gate is smitten with destruction. There is no joy in Mudville. And everybody's going to have to taste of it. There is destruction coming. The burdens of the nations are coming. And you may wonder, why? As this was being read the first time, maybe they went, why? Why is this happening? Well, there's an answer. Look back in verse 5. God tells them exactly why the burdens are such as they are. The earth is defiled under the inhabitants of it because they have transgressed the laws, they changed the ordinance, they've broken the everlasting covenant. There's the reason for the punishment. There's the reason for the burdens. There are consequences to violating God's standards for both Jew and Gentile. And He says, I'm cleaning house. I'm coming. And it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter where you are. Gates aren't going to stop it. Walls aren't going to stop it. Armies aren't going to stop it. Money's not going to stop it. This is my world. This is my earth. Look how it ends in verse 21 through 23. It's God making the statement, I'm in control of this. Do you remember if this was a Bible class, I know you'd answer this. What is one of the main themes of the book of Daniel? And what we have been taught so young. And the book of Daniel, the main theme of the book of Daniel is God rules in the affairs of men. God rules in the nations of men. Daniel was well after Isaiah. When Daniel is making note of the fact God rules in the nations of men, that wasn't new information. That wasn't some enlightening thing that nobody had ever been taught before. Here's God making the statement hundreds of years before that. Verse 21, it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord will punish the host of the high, those that are on high, and the kings of the earth on the earth. It doesn't matter who you are. Doesn't matter how high you sit. Doesn't matter what your throne is. Punishment's coming. Verse 22. They'll be gathered together as prisoners gathered in the pit. And they'll be shut up in prison. And after many days, they shall be visited. Then the moon will be confounded. The sun will be ashamed. When the Lord of hosts shall reign in Mount Zion and in Jerusalem and before the ancients gloriously. You're sitting on a throne, I'm going to crash the throne. You've got a kingdom, I'm going to destroy that kingdom because this is my world. And from my throne, I will pass judgment. Verse 33, the Lord of hosts reigns in Mount Zion. Chapters 13 through 23. Here's the burden. Here's the burden. Here's the burden. Here's the burden. Here's what's going to happen to you, ungodly nations. Chapter 24 is the conclusion of it, the crescendo of it. Destruction's coming. Doom is coming. Because this is my world. And I sit on my throne. And I have spoken it. Now, if that's where the story ended, not much going on that me and you can be very happy about. But that's the beauty of the rest of this section. Chapters 25, 26, and 27 is a series of psalms. A series of psalms of praise. Look in chapter 25, verse 1. O Lord, Thou art my God, I will exalt You, I will praise Your name. Look in chapter 26, verse 1. In that day shall this song be sung in the land of Judah. 25, 26, and 27 is a series of songs. And it's a series of songs of praise. And in these songs, what you have is a glimmer of hope is held up. And it is in direct contrast to everything that we've we've seen in the last 11 chapters. That long section of the burdens. And this last chapter where God just shows, here's why. Again, we're not breaking these whole chapters down, but what these chapters are speaking of, they are messianic chapters. They are songs where a deliverer is made note of. And in this Psalms of Praise, there are some things that just kind of pop out throughout the chapters. Let me show you a couple examples of them. In chapter 25, verse 4, in these Psalms, you have a message of God who has just described Himself as the one who's bringing judgment. And yet in these songs, he is described as a defender of the needy, the comforter of the righteous. Look in chapter 25, verse 4. You have been a strength to the poor. And would that not be a benefit to them? You have been a strength to the needy in distress. Well, when we're in distress, isn't that a benefit? Look at that last phrase. A refuge from the storm. Isn't that a wonderful blessing? Just a couple months ago, when that big hailstorm come through and damaged so many homes of people me and you know and love, and some even some here today, pretty big storm. Have you ever thought about what it would have been like to have been outside it? What if you didn't have your home? As much as it may have been destroyed, as much as might have gotten torn up, that you had to jump through a bunch of hoops and a bunch of phone calls, and you had to wait and be patient as it was getting fixed. What had you not had it? What if you not had that refuge when 12-pound chunks of ice was falling? What if you'd been out in the yard trying to cover up from that stuff? He's a refuge in a time of storm. A shadow from the heat. When the blast of the terrible ones is as a storm against the wall. Here's this psalm of praise of the protection and the deliverance that God has for His people. Look in chapter 26, verse 3. You will keep him in perfect peace, those whose mind is stayed on you. Throughout these Psalms, here's this God speaking of Himself in chapter 24 with the destructive hand that He's about to put out among the people. And yet here's this psalm of praise of the protection He has for those that are His. At the same time, go back to chapter 25. Another theme that runs through these songs is that not only is He a defender of the needy, but He's a punisher of the wicked. And that's what that long section prior was. Verse 5, you will bring down the noise of strangers as the heat in a dry place. Even the heat with the shadow of a cloud, the branch of the terrible ones, will be brought low. Look in chapter 26, verse 5. He brings down them that dwells on high. The lofty city, He lays it low. He lays it low even to the ground. He brings it to the dust. The same God that is a protection from the heat to those that are His, He's the source of the heat when destruction has to be handed out and when judgment needs to be rendered. The same God in this psalm who is a protector in times of storm to His own is the source of storm in the lives and in the nations that are about to face their burdens. And so that's what chapters 25 and 26 and 27 are. These songs of praise to God. And I want to pull out some of the highlights, I guess you might say, of them. Again, when you compare these three chapters to the 10 or 11 that's before it, how much joy we ought to have. Because we have seen nothing. In this last 3 months of readings, we've seen nothing but gloom and doom and destruction. And now the song of praise and the future deliverance. Look in verse 6 of chapter 25. In this mountain shall the Lord of hosts make unto all the people a feast of fat things. There is a feast that's available. There is a banquet that is open. And we're familiar with what that is. We know what a formal banquet is. Every one of us in this room have been to one. Either as a guest, or it could have been you were the honoree. Maybe it was a sports banquet and you was on the team. Maybe it's a band banquet and you were a part of the band. Whatever. We know what it's like to go to a banquet. Somebody is being honored. We've never been to anyone like this. Look in verse 8. He will swallow up death in victory. There's been a lot of death that's been described in the last 13 chapters. But no more. He will swallow up death in victory. The Lord God will wipe away tears from all the faces. And by the way, the last 13 chapters or so, there's been a lot of tears. The burden of Babylon, the burden of Moab, the burden of Ammon, the burden of Israel, the burden of Judah. There's been a lot of tears. And when God passes judgment, they're going to happen. And yet there's a place where those tears will be wiped away. The rebuke of the people He will take away from all the earth, for the Lord has spoken. Did you catch that phrase? That's the same phrase from chapter 24. Destruction's coming. It's coming to all of you. I have spoken it from my glorious throne. Chapter 25. There's a feast. You can dine with the King. You can sup with me. There'll be no tears. Death will be a thing of the past. It'll be victorious. I have spoken it. That's the difference between this section and the prior section. This is not an ordinary banquet. We've been invited to dine with the King. You go from this universal burden, this universal judgment, to now this act of fellowship, this act of salvation and victory. Verse 8 is an important verse. It says, the rebuke of the people has been taken away. This is not a banquet for the perfect. We've been studying about that very same thing in Romans. What are the underlying themes of that? These are not people that were rebukeless. But what he says is that the rebuke has been taken away. So who is it that's been invited to this feast? The forgiven. The ones whom the rebuke has been removed. An alternative to all that punishment that we've been reading about for so long. It's being an option being given. An invitation being extended out. So let me just pause and ask the question. Does this sound pretty good? Compared to what we've been reading since about mid-June? I guess that's about the time we probably started chapter 13. Working on 2 and 3 months, we've been reading about the burdens of the nations. Does it sound good to not have to taste of that? Does it sound good to not have to for that not to symbolically fall back on us? Is it something we want to be a part of, this feast that we've been invited to? Well, it's an invitation that we have to make a response of. Look in chapter 26. Some of the things that if we want to be a part of this, we want the rebuke to be gone so that we can dine with the King. I've got to do some things. Chapter 26, verse 4. Trust in the Lord forever, for in the Lord Jehovah is an everlasting rock, an everlasting strength. I want to be a part of that feast, that banquet. Then I've got to do the trusting. And that can't be done by anybody else. You can't trust the strength for me. You can't trust the rock of Jehovah for me. I can't trust it for you. You know what tends to happen? Sometimes when our burdens pile up, we're using that in a different sense than Isaiah did. But we can make an application, can't we? When you and I have our burdens, you know what we tend to do? Well, I'll just save up another grand. I'll just buy another one of this. A lot of times we try to deal with our burdens ourselves and our trust. Not there. Look in verse 7. The way of the just is upright. The most upright will direct the path of the just. I want to be a part of that feast. I have to do some trusting. I want to be a part of that feast. I've got to do some traveling, for lack of a better phrase. Mark your spot and go back to Psalm 25. I told you that chapter 25, 26, and 27 are Psalms. Well, let's go back to the book of Psalms. Because a very similar statement with a little bit more detail is given in the 25th Psalm, one of the Psalms of David. We'll start in verse 4 when you get there. If we were to be a part of that feast, we talked last week, I am the way, Jesus said. Well, there is a certain way that we can be there. It's a way of righteousness, a highway of holiness. Look in verse 4 of Psalm 25. Show me your ways, O Lord. Teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me. For you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. Does that sound like trust? This psalm and what is being taught in Isaiah, so similar. There is a way, verse 4, show it to me. There is a path, O Lord, teach it to me. Verse 5, on you I wait. Remember, O Lord, your tender mercies and your loving kindness, for they have been ever of old. Does that sound like not what Isaiah was saying? Burdens are coming. Destruction is coming. But He can remove the rebuke and He can invite us to a banquet. Verse 7, remember not the sins of my youth nor my transgressions. Amen to that. According to your mercy, remember thou me for your goodness. Good and upright is the Lord. Therefore will He teach sinners in the way. The meek He will guide into judgment. And the meek He will teach His way. And the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth unto such as keep His covenant and His testimonies. There is a way. It's a learnable way. Here's the question. Verse 9, how meek are we? Because that's who's going to be guided in this judgment. How meek are we? That's who can be taught in His way. Verse 10, how good are we at keeping His commandments and His testimonies? That's how we can have our rebuke gone. That's how we can take part in that victory supper. And you go back to Isaiah 26. And with that detail from the 25th Psalm, look back in verse 7. The way of the just is upright. There is a path to travel, and it's a just path, and it's a righteous path. And I have to travel it if I want to be at that feast. Look in verse 8 and 9. I have to trust Him. I have to travel in His path. Verse 8, yea, in the way of your judgments, O Lord, have we waited for you. The desire of our soul is to your name and to the remembrance of you. There's some reverence there, isn't it? There's some awe and remembrance of who He is. Look in verse 9. With my soul have I desired in you in the night. With my spirit within me, I will seek you early. You want to be a part of that feast of chapter 25? Sound pretty good to us, especially compared to the burdens that were mentioned earlier? Then I've got to trust. And there's a certain path I have to be traveling. And I'm going to have to show some reverence and some awe and some respect. I'm going to have to desire Him. And that desire is going to lead to me learning the paths of that highway of holiness. Do we see the psalm and what it's telling us? There is an invitation. But what if we do it? Look in verse 12. Still chapter 26, verse 12. Lord, you will ordain peace for us. What a contrast to the burdens of all those other chapters. If I trust, if I stay on the path of the upright, if I revere, if I desire, to put it all up into a word, if I serve, there is peace for me when the judgments are passed. When the burdens are taken into accountability. That's the beauty of this psalm. And how glorious is it? Look in chapter 27. Another song of praise. But again, such a contrast. You remember what we read earlier in chapter 24? Destruction's coming. And it's coming for everybody. From the kings to the paupers. From the lenders to the borrowers. From the maids to the mistresses. It all. And it talked about the destruction of those cities. They are going to dust. And then in chapter 27, what you've got is this incredible vineyard that God begins to describe, that He's going to rise up, that He's going to take care of and prepare. Look in verse 2 of chapter 26. In that day, sing to her. Again, here's the song of chapter 27. In that day, sing to her a vineyard of red wine. So if you imagine this great vineyard just rolling. And now look in verse 3. I, the Lord, keep it. What a husbandman that is. Here's the Lord in song saying, there's a vineyard, and I'm overseeing it. I'm taking care of it. And let's find out how good a job He does. Verse 3, I, the Lord, keep it. I will keep it, I will water it every moment, lest any should hurt it. I will keep it night and day. Fury is not in me. Who would set the briars and the thorns against me in battle? I would go through them, I would burn them together. Or let him take hold of my strength, that he may make peace with me, and he will make peace with me. He will cause them that come of Jacob. Israel will blossom and bud and fill the face of the world with fruit. You talk about a night and day difference. Chapter 24. Destruction, chaos, gloom, everything reverting back to dust when He gets through passing His burdens. Chapter 27, I know who my people are, and I can take care of them. And He gives this image of a good husbandman who waters and weeds and protects. And He does it night and day. Nothing can come into harm. Peace existing. Blossoming. Fruit being described. Protected and at peace. Look in verse 13. Look at the very last phrase. What's all this a reference to? Very last sentence. Last half a sentence of verse 13. They shall worship the Lord in the holy mount of Jerusalem. Again, we're trying to just paraphrase all these chapters. But what this is a reference to is the remnant. Yes, burdens are coming. Judah, a burden's coming to you too. You're going to be punished for your unfaithfulness. But I have made promises to you. There will be a remnant that will come back. And me and you who know the rest of the story that Isaiah couldn't have told them about. We know about men like Zerubbabel. We know about men like Haggai. We know about men like Nehemiah. I will bring a group back. And they will worship me on the holy mount. And they'll be mine. And I can protect them. And I can take care of them. And all this that we'd seen earlier, if you're trying to put it all together, they've been chastened. And there's going to be some burdens they have to deal with. Look in verse 7. Has He smitten him? As He smote those that smote him? As He slain according to the slaughter of those that are slain by Him? Look in verse 9. By this therefore shall the iniquity of Jacob be purged. What was all this about? It's a purging. It's a cleansing. It's a restoration. But they have come out of it. And they will come out of it clean. They will come out of it forgiven. They will come out of it in peace with God. Dining in fellowship, and the remnant will be back. Here's Isaiah, even before the fall, speaking of God being faithful to his promises. And so you look at all this whole section, 24, 25, 26, 27, and as we read them for the next couple months, however long that takes us, what we've seen in all these prior sections, we've seen punishment for violating God's standards. We've seen the burdens of the nations. We have seen there in verse 7, in verse 9, there is a purging that's going to take place because of consequences. And yet there's a feast awaiting those who trust, those who desire, those who will walk the highway of holiness, and they will be abundant, and they will be fruitful, and they will blossom. And then what you got is worship with the Lord, acceptable again. And that's Isaiah laying out the burdens of the people. Now me and you, what we have to do, we're going to take that and make applications to ourselves. There's still a different law, but there's a way of righteousness and there's a way of unrighteousness. There is still a king ruling from his throne, and he still, the nations are his today, just as they were then, just as they were at the end of chapter 24. And me and you still have choices of will we trust or will we not? Will we desire or will we not? Will we revere Him or will we not? These songs still apply to us. We just got to make the spiritual application of that. Think about all the parables that Jesus taught about a feast. Think about all the songs we still sing to this day. All things are ready. Come to the feast. Isaiah was singing about a feast a long, long, long time ago. And me and you invited to that. What a glorious thing that is. All of us have what we will call desires of the flesh, the here and the now. But we need to also have some desires of the soul. From here to there. From the now to then. But we've got to have eyes to see that. Get your songbooks out. What a beautiful picture chapter 25, 26, and 27 give us of a king waiting to take us back. The same God who can punish is the same God, remember through the songs, that is a help to the needy. Anchor to the waves. And me and you today can take advantage of that. If you're not a Christian, take advantage. If you are a Christian, but you're not what we ought to be. That highway of holiness is not where our feet are. But we're here and we can make it right. Do it while we stand and sing.